Good morning and welcome to Taking Care of Business live in the RPPFM studios. Good to have your company today. We discuss as many angles as we can possibly fit into 1 hour about selling your business, both bricks and mortar and online businesses as well. This is all brought to you by our friends at eView Real Estate. Joining me now live in the studio is my first expert, Denise Hall, who's an ex-business owner and now an exit strategist and business broker. Denise, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good morning and thank you for having me.
It's good to have you back. I was saying earlier before we came on air, I was looking back in the files and it was almost a year ago you were on the show. We were talking then about buying and selling a business.
Yeah.
And I thought it was good, just there was so much we covered, so I thought it was a good idea to focus on one of them. And I think the area of selling your business is something that everyone should consider, shouldn't they?
Yes, absolutely. It's that notion of starting with the end in mind that a lot of we speak about it a lot. It's kind of referred to a lot, but kind of what does that actually mean?
Yeah, I know when I'm dealing in my business world and with other business people that one of the basic advice to anyone in a business, like whether they're starting a business or in the middle of it, is that every business should have an exit strategy. It's a question I ask a lot of my guests, and I'm often quite surprised by the answer. A lot of them say, "Oh no, I don't have an exit strategy. The business is going to die with me."
Yes, and that's that would be quite typical. I mean, it depends. In some cases where you have to go for bank funding, for example, you have to have an exit strategy in there. But generally, that's a comment around, I'm going to build it and sell it in 5 years. Like, there's nothing particularly structured in that. But many, in fact most, have not thought about an exit strategy until such time as it starts to feel like it might be a bit real, like there might be a reason or a catalyst to do something about it.
With the baby boomers retiring now, does that mean then there's going to be a glut of businesses for sale?
Maybe. And the reason I say maybe is because unless they're in a state that is saleable, then they may very well not be able to. So could there be a glut? Maybe. Mm. It depends on the industry and it depends on what's around and what is seen to have a future. So that's kind of one guide. But the other one would be that maybe with some of them, they've made a whole lot of money through the process. They've had it for a long time. It's worked very well for them to now spend a lot of time, effort and energy in bringing it into the 21st century a little bit just may not be worth the effort.
Yeah, I was reading some stats that said over 80% of Australian business leaders agree that a large proportion of Australian businesses will be put up for sale in the near future. 80%.
Well, I would suggest to you that 80% is the number that is could go on the market. I'm thinking that it won't be that many.
Okay.
I think different decisions will be made, but that's the potential for sure.
Right. Now, as a business broker, can you just quickly explain what that means?
Yeah, so we basically are matchmakers from a buy and sell point of view. So we have buyers, we have sellers, and we're the ones that kind of sit on the fence and try and make all the parts that need to work and need to be conducive to both parties saying, yes, this is a goer, I'm going to sign the piece of paper that says this is a deal. We orchestrate, we're almost a conductor, you know, we orchestrate that and by matching the buyers and the sellers.
I can imagine that people looking at selling their business come to you and they may have overinflated ideas about what their business is worth. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, that's a fairly good comment. And part of our role is to kind of bring market realities in there.
Yeah, because it's very emotional, particularly if it's your own business. I mean, it's your baby, you've put your heart and soul into it. So you then have this, overinflated view of what it's worth. So as part of your process, do you take the business owner through that to actually break it down as to what's valuable and what isn't?
Yeah, we do. And the quite often what they think it's worth is what they've spent on it in blood, sweat and tears and money.
Yeah.
And just because you've spent maybe a lot of money on a website, for example, doesn't mean has the same value to the person who may look to buy it. So just because of what you've spent on something doesn't mean that's what it's worth. So quite often a comment will be, okay, so tell me what price would you like? And they'll say, well, I've spent this on it. Okay, that's not the question I'm asking.
Yeah.
And so to be able to determine the price, it's actually quite difficult because that is then bound by the market trends and what's being sold in their industry currently and all the kind of the what I mentioned before.
So how do you break it down? So if I come to you as a business owner and say, look, I'm considering to sell my business, how do you break down different elements? Because there's obviously the IP, the intellectual property yeah. side of the business. There's if there's products or services, that would vary. Do you actually value the brand as well? You go through all that. Goodwill, is goodwill still a saleable item? It used to be. I don't know. Is it still?
It used to be, and that was very much about your bricks and mortar shop, yep. You know, your passing trade. With a lot of businesses now that are service-based and so forth, goodwill kind of, it doesn't have the same regard as what it once did. I'm of the view that your goodwill is actually in your database. So if you've got a database, regardless of what business that you run, whether that be service or retail, it actually doesn't matter. But the point about a database is they've bought from you and you can establish a relationship with them to buy back from you again, yeah, which is kind of what that yeah. passing trade variation. So I think, yeah, my view is that your goodwill sits in your database and the relationship you've got with your database.
Yeah, that's a really good tip.
Or your client list or whatever you choose to call it.
What other elements of the business are valuable?
Yeah, so certainly from an exit point of view, I would suggest to you if you're going to look at selling, start like 2 years out. Give yourself 2 years.
Okay.
Especially if you are in the majority of cases where you're the business to some extent.
Yeah.
You've kind of got a business as a job replacement. This is a two-year process, and the things that you need to be really mindful of are that your financial records are up to date. You know,
yeah,
that doesn't always happen.
So do you think that if you're seriously considering selling your business before they come to you, for instance, the first port of call should be their accountant?
Well, I'd like to suggest that you come to me first.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. You need an A team around a business, and your accountant yeah. is in the A team. Your brand manager might be in your A team, your PR, your legals, depending on what your A team needs to look like. Now, the reason they're on your A-team is because they are very skilled in the bit that they do, yeah?
Yeah.
But they don't have an overall view, generally speaking. So your accountant is very good at the financials. Your legals is very good at legals. And so they're quite siloed.
Yeah.
So what you need is someone like myself, for example, who is that conductor who oversees
it. Like the helicopter view of the business.
That's it. And sees how all the parts need to blend and how they all need to be saying the same thing. And just because you might be really good at one part and not so good at the other part, that will determine the value and the price and everything else that goes with it. So you really... I would suggest that you talk to somebody who understands that, you know, the exit strategy piece, what that in fact means.
Okay. Now, how many people like you are there around? How many business brokers are there? Is it a lot? Or?
There's not a lot of business brokers, right. But even there are a number of business broking as an industry is licensed. Yeah. If you are touting yourself to be a business broker, then you should be licensed, and that sits under the real estate law. There's a whole reason for that.
Yep.
I can explain that another day. And so licensed, and then you are bound by rules and regulations of that legislation. Now, there are some others that tout themselves about being a broker or having this discussion, but I would strongly suggest that whoever you're going to talk to, ask them if they're licensed.
Yeah, it's a good tip.
And if they are licensed, well and good, continue the conversation. If they're not, they might be able to help you in terms of getting it ready, but whether they should be taking you to market is quite a different thing. Ultimately, it's your call, but you're doing that on your own.
Okay, so you're the broker's the first port of call is your recommendation.
Yeah.
So the business owner goes on their own or do they bring accountants with them?
Come talk to me first.
Right, okay.
Let's map out what it is you actually want to do
yeah.
and what we've got. What have we got to play with?
Have you ever been in a situation where you've spoken to the business owner and realised that they're selling for the wrong reasons and talk them out of it?
I can't do that. It's ultimately their decision. And there's a whole lot of reasons why that comes to play. Maybe health, maybe family. Like, there's a whole raft of reasons. But what invariably happens, though, is if I get it running the way it's supposed to run and it's ticking over nicely and the owner's actually not the centre of attention anymore, they don't necessarily want to sell.
Oh, okay.
I'll do myself out of a job.
Well, no, that's good advice.
But that in itself is great
because
what it's done is, and I talk about finishing unfinished business, because this notion, I've always had this dream, right, of finishing it off so that it can stand on its own 2 feet. And for a whole raft of reasons, that doesn't actually quite happen over the period of time they've got it. And so if I can work with them and get it to a point where it is actually standalone and it carries value in its own right, then that's an asset. That's not a job. They haven't just replaced themselves. That's an asset as part of their portfolio of or suite of stuff they own. Yeah? So it's a different conversation. Like it has a different emphasis in it, and because it's an asset, it has a different value.
So if you're wanting to sell your business, as obviously you've put together a budget, how do you take a percentage of it? How do you get paid for this?
So generally speaking, if we're going to do an exit strategy, then that might be, say, some kind of a monthly retainer or something like that over a period of time where I work with you over that time and we get it all sorted. Then from a sale point of view, that's a success fee.
Okay.
Yeah, so if there's costs involved, like marketing costs, depending on how we do it, because sometimes we don't go to the market. We might go to our own list of buyers, or we might go to a select group that we know would be interested in this, because the part of going through the strategy is to work out who will buy it. So sometimes we don't have to go public. We can actually facilitate the sale before. And so there may not be fees involved in that, but there'll be a percentage of the sale price.
So if I was putting a budget, just a ballpark figure, if I was going to sell my business, how much should I put aside?
Oh, well, it depends on the value of your business, really. But for a startup, you'd be putting $5,000 aside.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. It's good to, you know that ballpark figure. Okay, now while we take a glass of water and a bit of a breather, we'll be right back on the other side of this break with a free legal perspective on selling your business. Welcome back to Taking Care of Business. It's 11:23 and that was Dan Mangan with the optimistic version of our discussion today, the song called Sold. And joining Denise Hall, our business broker expert today, I'd also like to welcome Taking Care of Business own legal expert, Richard Goldsmith from Carroll Goldsmith Lawyers. Hi,
thanks,
Richard.
Thanks for having me back, Jackie.
And I love it. I always feel very secure when you're in the studio with us here. Now, with selling a business, that must be something you come across a lot in your everyday legal practice?
Yeah, quite regularly, Jackie. Yeah, it's obviously a big part of the economy. People often start businesses with the sole purpose of building them up so they can sell them with a significant profit. So it's a big part of what we do.
And what are some of the key legal considerations in selling a business that business owners should be aware of?
Look, there's a number. I'll perhaps just touch on a few to begin with. When we're talking about price, we need to apportion the price in a tax advantageous way. So that's a discussion with your accountant often, but we need to separate the goodwill from the plant and equipment and the stock, because they're treated as different assets from a tax point of view. So that's an important starting point. GST is an issue. That's normally an issue for the purchaser coming in, that if you're selling a business as a going concern, there's no GST payable. But if it's not as a going concern and there's some tax rulings about what is or isn't a going concern, then there's tax payable and the purchaser would be liable for that, and often it's something that they pick up in their next BAS statement anyway, so it can be a neutral thing, but it's still a consideration. The business name, that's generally the big ticket item. That's what you're buying. That's what a lot of the goodwill is associated around, so clearly that's an important thing to make sure that that's transferred correctly.
But also, before it's transferred correctly, to make sure you've got it registered correctly.
Yeah, that's right. Generally, clients coming to us have taken care of that, but it, on the odd occasion, you might find that it hasn't been registered. It might be a business that's been established for some time, and you know the people running the business haven't kept up with the requirements of keeping it registered and all the rest of it. So yeah, that's an important part.
And the registration also, would you recommend that they also have the trademark?
Generally, the short answer is yes, but not all business names are capable of being trademarked because they may be a bit too descriptive. They may feature a geographical reference that other people may want to use. So we've got some clients who've had difficulty in the past registering trademarks, and I have a client at the moment trying to talk with the IP Australia about registering his trademark because the complaint from them is that it's too descriptive and other traders might want to use it. So they're all important parts of running any business, of identifying a good business name that you might be able to, you know, trademark and then and keep for yourself.
And the digital side now is not a nice to have. It's absolutely essential. So having a domain name come with your business name, I would assume, would be important.
Absolutely. It's part of the due diligence that anyone would undertake. You'd get the domain names, you'd get email addresses, you'd get Facebook, you'd get Twitter, you'd get any of those social media accounts that people are operating. That would always be part of the sale, part of the assets that you're purchasing, for sure.
Okay, what else have you got on your list?
Restraint of trade, that's an important thing, especially for the purchaser. So if you're a purchaser coming into a business and you've got someone who's a good operator, you don't want them being your competitor. You don't want them opening them up next door.
Yeah.
Now, there are limitations on what we can and can't do in that regard. For example, I think we've discussed before, if you're a hairdresser, there's a million hairdressers in Mount Eliza, I know, for example. It's difficult to argue that they can't open up within a kilometre radius because you've got so much competition anyway. But if you've got a unique business, you want to expand that that geographical area as much as you can to eliminate your competition. That is, you don't want that person you're buying the business from opening up next door and taking all your customers.
So that's based on a bricks and mortar business. What about a business that is operating from home? Do the same rules apply?
Are you talking about an online business?
Yeah, or just a business that you're operating from home?
Well, there's still a geographical element to that. And there's only so much that a court would think would be reasonable in any restraint. So without a specific example, it's hard to say, but you'd certainly still
be... Let's say a PR consultancy, if you were just working from the home office.
Then you might... If your clients are in from a particular area, if they're in the CBD... you may ask that they be restricted from operating for a period, you know, of 3 to 6 months. What you don't want is that those customers going straight over to your competitor. You want an opportunity to show that you're capable of providing the services and therefore retaining those customers.
I think the home-based business side of it's a bit grey, isn't it?
It's a little bit difficult. And those sorts of client list type jobs we're talking about, like an example might be an accountant who buys a practice, and essentially what you're buying is a customer list. And so you can have some provisions in those types of contracts where you won't pay 100% of the purchase price. In 6 months' time, you'll reassess and check that how many of those clients have come across, how many you've retained, and if you'd have a dollar value on each of those clients, and if there's a percentage of those, then you'd pay the balance or a percentage of the balance depending on how many of those clients you've managed to retain.
I would add to that too, a key consideration is to actually find out why the seller is selling. Mm-hmm. Because generally speaking, if they're selling because they're retiring, the last thing they're going to do is set up down the road. Sometimes it's a little hard to get to the core as to why, but try as hard as you can to actually understand why they're selling.
Yeah, good tip. It's good advice.
Yeah, absolutely. So some other things, some practical things that you've got to consider, I guess, is outstanding debts, invoices, you know, how that's going to work if they're paid after you've taken over the business,
right.
and equally creditors and so work in progress, all those types of things. So generally you'd work out some sort of a formula that satisfies both parties. And another big ticket item could be employee entitlements. So you've got employees, they've accrued long service leave, annual leave, those types of things. How are you going to deal with that? And if it's not dealt with properly in the contract, then you'll purchaser coming in is going to take over all those liabilities and not necessarily be aware that they've actually taken them over. So often at settlement, you'll find there'll be an adjustment where the vendor would pay the purchaser a portion or all of the entitlements to the employees, and so therefore they sort of start again, if you like, with the new employer.
What are some of the common traps business owners fall into?
One of the big ones we see, and it can be what you would think would be a seemingly easy thing, is that where you buy a business that's leasing premises, is getting that transfer from the getting the landlord of those premises to consent to the transfer. We've had deals go on and on literally for months because the landlord isn't satisfied that the person coming in has the necessary business experience to operate the business or the necessary financial resources to operate the business. And so that can be a really lengthy process where the person coming in, it's the furthest thing on their mind is that there's going to be an issue with the landlord going into these new premises. And of course, that's part of the going concern. It's often a very valuable, you know, it might be a very prominent position that you want, you understand is an important part of the business, a valuable part of the business. And it can be a real headache for a lot of people.
Okay. Now, what would be the number one tip? So someone's considering selling it. They haven't made a decision yet. They're not quite sure. What would you advise them, the number one thing to do first?
Oh, we'll get a proper valuation of the business, clearly. Talk to their accountant and make sure that any deal that we've put together is structured in the most tax advantageous way, really. That's the number one thing. And I guess part of that is, and alludes to what Denise said, is being satisfied that they're going to get a good price of what they're doing and that they're prepared to put their feet up for a little while.
Yeah, so manage those expectations is really key. Now, Denise, you mentioned that from a plan, I think the planning perspective and planning advice is good too about managing expectations. So if you're going to see your business 2 years, you mentioned, so expect for about 2 years to do that. Is that in your experience as well, Richard, about that length of time?
Look, people come to us and the deal's probably half done. So I wouldn't not always privy to those sorts of thoughts on and how long the planning process is. I know I've experienced some sales where I've acted for the purchaser of a business and it's been a health issue that's been quite sudden that's caused people to sell businesses. So there's a variety of reasons, I guess, that people are selling businesses.
What about when you think about selling your business because for reasons of it's time to move on, I'm sick of it, I don't want the responsibility, really basic, nothing too tragic, but really basic ideas. But you think, look, I still like to be a little bit involved. Can you sell yourself as part of the business?
Well, look, that's often part, can be often part of a sale, is that the person, I'm doing one at the moment where they're going to retain people for 12 months. So the key person is going to stay on for 12 months as an employee. And that's obviously a good way too of avoiding them from going out and opening its competition. So you pay them a competitive salary, you get their knowledge, their goodwill and their contacts that have helped them build the business. And it can often be quite a smooth transaction. So that's fairly common.
And then just on the back of that, you need to make sure that the business has to be of size to be able to accommodate that.
Right, yeah? Of course.
So yes. It has to be able to accommodate that extra salary, completely understand why you do it, and it's actually a really nice way of being able to facilitate the process. But the business has to be of size to be able to cope with that.
Yeah, so maybe some setting out some strategies. I would imagine that would be very attractive to a buyer, I suppose, depending what field that you're in.
Well, certainly to the vendor as well, because you're selling your business at if you're getting a reasonable dollar for it, that's fantastic. And at the same time, you've got security of employment for the next 12 months.
But it does depend, though, on what the seller is wanting to do next, A. And B, it actually does depend why the buyer's buying it, because that's equally as important. Because if they're going to run it same as for the next 12 months, perfect arrangement. Mm. If they've actually got a view as to I'm buying it looking like that, but I'm actually going to make it look like something else, that value may not deem to be there. It really does depend on the next path that the business will take.
Yeah, certainly.
But I think a real sign of the times is online businesses, and we find out the keys to selling an online business on the other side of this break. Thank God it's Friday. That means it's Taking Care of Business. Thank you for listening. Well, that was Prince. And as he put it, selling a business online is certainly a sign of the times. And we'd like to welcome Taking Care of Business own New Age Commerce expert Grant Arnott back.
Thanks, Jackie.
Good to have you here as our online expert. Now, it's an area, interestingly, that a lot of people don't know about, how to sell an online business.
Yeah, look, I don't know that it's radically different to what we've seen with other businesses, and I've heard a lot of good things already on the show, but I guess the main factors are acknowledging the growth. You know, a lot of online retail businesses are less mature than some established businesses, and so they're on a high growth curve, as is the industry. It's growing at about 13% per year. So that's good news. There's a lot of interest in the space, and a lot of people, it can be good and bad. You know, a lot of potential buyers are waiting to see whether there is going to be a crash or you know, looking for who has the sustainable business models. And I think that's key to being able to sell your business, is that you've got a model that's sustainable. Some of the ones that are heavily reliant on buying a lot of inventory are starting to struggle if they're cost of marketing becomes too high. If they don't meet their sales targets, then it's a bit harder. Whereas those that are a little bit more nimble and perhaps have a drop shipping model where they don't have to warehouse a whole heap of stock, but they've got access to direct deals from overseas coming straight to the consumer, and they don't have to buy all that product in, can be a bit more attractive as well. And I guess the other factors that come into it are, how visible are you online? I mean, building a brand in the online space is about, a lot of it's about how discoverable are you on Google particularly, which drives so much traffic. And if you're well down the page, you don't have as much value as someone who's much higher up in the search engine results pages. So that's a significant driver of value. Denise touched on a database earlier, and I can't agree more with that when it comes to online. Not only the size of the database, but how responsive are they? Is it a true database where every time you send them a piece of communication via email or social media, that they're responsive and that they're engaged and that they're actually responding to the offers that you might send out and buying things? Or is it a bit of a dead database which is large but largely unresponsive?
Yeah, absolutely. And from a brokering point of view, I guess the way we look at the value within an online business, three things: traffic, client list, and how responsive that is. From a traffic point of view, how they find you and how more likely that's going to continue, and profit. Now, generally speaking, with online businesses, they're still kind of working out that profit piece with some, but they're the three parts that are very, very important when looking at the value that lies within an online business.
Grant, is it still a trend when you start an online business to consider very seriously that a bigger competitor may buy you out?
I don't know if it's a trend. Look, I think knowing who you're... we've talked a lot about exit strategy, or you guys have before I came on the show, and knowing what that looks like, who it's going to be, is really important to establish from the beginning, and who you want it to be as well. Is it someone that's strategically aligned? Because that can add a lot of value to your business. There's, you know, the nuts and bolts of a business valuation, which is just down to, okay, how much money does the business make? And if it makes $50,000 a year or $100,000 a year, someone may be willing to pay two or three times that is sort of the going rate for the purchase cost of a business. But in the online space, you can develop a real X factor if you've got great technology, great systems that a bigger player doesn't have, even though you're at the smaller end of the scale, but you're fast moving, you're agile, and you're on an upward growth curve. That can be really attractive and can balloon out the valuation, so that you're suddenly talking about a 10, 20 times multiple on profits. And we've seen that, you know, happen in the market a few times, where, you know, companies see a hot, bright star rising that they just want to jump onto and own not only the customer base, but also the intellectual property and the innovation, I guess, that has gone along with getting them to that point. So if you've got that X factor, and if you've got that strategic alignment with a buyer, I think you've got the potential for more value than just someone who's just looking at it as, okay, how much money does it make? Okay, we'll take that on and we'll know we'll get X return, versus someone who thinks, okay, this business is on an upward growth trajectory. If we grab it now and pay a little bit over the odds, we can do some extraordinary things with it.
Agreed. And what you'll find with some of the purchases is actually looked at from a bolt-on perspective. So there may be an offline capability mm-hmm. that works really, really well, and they're looking to bring in an online. They might have had a dabble at it and hasn't kind of actually worked. They'll shop They'll go looking to find that online piece that is working and then bring the two together.
So if I've got an online business that's been running for over 12 months so I can prove its growth, some growth, of course.
At least one or two financial returns.
Yeah, okay, at least one or two financial returns, that's good advice. And then I think I'm going to try and sell it. Yep. What's the first port of call from an online perspective? Would I go through the same process as I would?
Well, certainly a business broker, you know, is a viable option. And, you know, that's... great advice in terms of, I think Denise was talking earlier about getting the A-team together. So that is your starting point, getting that A-team together who's going to help look at where the value is in your business, help you prepare a prospectus that's going to be attractive, that shows not only the current facts, but the potential. And I think if you're selling the potential of the business to someone, just like you're selling a home, you know, with it's either a renovator's delight or it's ready to move into and own. It's not radically different in the business world. There's just a lot more complexities involved. And then, you know, whatever the balance sheet shows is obviously going to be really important when the accountants go through it as well. So you want to make sure that your systems are in order. I think the more systemized your business is, the more value it has as well. Someone doesn't want to come in, purchase a business and realize that there's no processes, there's no structure to how to do things, and it's you're basically inheriting a bit of a mess. It might be profitable, but if you have to put a whole lot of work into it to get everything aligned, that's going to be difficult. And it's also about what the owners want to do too. If they're a large part of the intellectual property and they're trying to just sell out and leave, and the whole reason for purchasing the business is that you want that intellectual property and innovation, then it can devalue the business. So I think, you know, business owners may need to be prepared to stay on with a new owner for 3 to 3 years.
Yeah, okay. That's all good advice. We're going to continue this entertaining discussion and go through some key tips to finish off the program, and we'll be right back after these entertaining messages. We are taking care of business. It's coming up to 10 to 12. That was the Bee Gees with Tragedy. So how do we ensure that it's not a tragedy when we decide to sell our business? Denise, what's the number one key to success?
So from my point of view, it's start with the end in mind. Work out, is it a date? Is it a time? Is it a birthday? What is it that is likely to be a catalyst for you wanting to sell? And work backwards. If that's going to, from that date, work backwards to 2 years and map it out and execute it.
Great. Richard, our legal expert, what's your number one tip?
Well, the number one tip is to get as much money as you possibly can for the sale of your business. And one of the ways to do that is to make sure that you've identified all your IP and placed a value on that, and where you can, registered your trademarks, identified all those things that you want to protect and then offer for sale, because they're the things that, for a lot of us, form a large part of the value of a business.
Yeah, that's great advice. And from a online business, Grant, what would be your number one tip?
The term I'd like to use is productize your business. So you don't want to have loose ends. You don't want to have an unorganized business structure. You really want to wrap it up in a beautiful package that you can basically present to a new owner that makes sense. All the data's in there, all your sales data, everything's nicely packaged. You've got systems for everything. They can pick up process manuals and just basically move in and take over the business and run it because it's so well organised. So productisation, I think, is important.
Okay, great. We had some questions through the week. I put it out on Facebook. Does anyone have a question that I'd like to offer our panel? And I've got quite a few. I was a bit pleased. And they were people that I didn't know, which was even better, because normally it's people I know that respond. Anyway, the question... that's right. Yeah, well, it is a hot topic. And I think it's something that people maybe think about and just think about it, and that's too hard. So it's something that's not discussed enough, I think. Anyway, can I sell a business if it is under my name? So I suppose the Dick Smith scenario, how do I sell a business if it's under my name? Does that mean I have to change my name, or how does it work?
Well, you're selling the entity that operates the business. If it's a company or a business name, registered business name, you can certainly transfer that business name. So there would be no reason why you couldn't. If you're operating a business as a sole trader, there may be some issues about what you're selling and where the goodwill and all that lies. But otherwise, I mean, the simple answer is yes.
Yeah, the simple answer is yes. Practically, though, if you have set it up, it's under your name and you haven't put the formal structure in place, then it's almost a business as a job type scenario, and they are notoriously difficult to sell because the job is yours. Okay. The relationship is yours, the job is yours, the business is yours.
So when you start your business, it's probably a good idea to put it under a generic name, because then it's easier to sell if you go down that route. And it's also, I think, I advise clients to do that, because sometimes it's good for people to not be quite sure how big your business or how small your business is.
That's exactly. So if we go to that, sorry, that start with the end in mind piece. Mm,
yes.
Yeah. If I want to sell it, I'm not selling it as Denise Hall.
Yep.
Because that doesn't mean anything to the market. Mm. It needs to be set up that it means something.
Yeah, it means something to us here at Taking Care of Business.
Of course.
But other than that, I take your point. Now, another question here. How can I sell a business without any business? So in other words, they're saying I've got a business to sell or an idea, but I actually don't have clients or product on my books to then sell.
My response?
Yes.
Good luck.
My response is, Google bought YouTube for billions of dollars. I can't remember the exact number, without YouTube ever having made any money. So if you've technology is a great example, or online, where you can potentially sell a business based on its potential. You've built something that no one else has got yet. You're a talented and innovative person who's put together a great idea that has yet to hit the market, or you don't actually know how to sell it to the market, but you know it's going to be a winner, then someone might happily snap that up. And you see it all the time in technology. I mean, Silicon Valley thrives on this stuff. It's not so prevalent in the Australian market, but no reason why it couldn't be. It just requires that innovative mentality. So yes, I'd say you can sell a business without having a business.
Yeah, there you go.
You can sell an idea.
I mean, perhaps a step before that is we see a lot of people look for equity partners, so they'll have the great idea, but they won't have the capital to start the business. And so that's the step prior to that is then getting those business partners in to actually develop our business.
Yeah, agreed. And just following on from the Google YouTube, you make no mistake that Google bought YouTube because it was cheaper to buy YouTube and bolted on than it was to build their own. Mm-hmm. And so there are a number that are similar to that, where I recognise that I need to be in this space. What is the best way for me to get in?
I think Facebook bought Instagram as well, didn't
same
they?
Same deal, yeah. Same reason.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'd like to thank our very, very special guest today and our expert, Denise Hall, business broker. Thank you so much, Denise.
My pleasure.
It was great
thank
having you.
You
always. Your advice and your expertise is really appreciated, and I know that all our listeners today would have got a lot out of it. Of course, Taking Care of Business's own legal eagle, Richard Goldsmith from Carroll Goldsmith.
I'm not sure if I like that description, but thanks anyway.
You don't like being called an eagle? I'll think of something else next time. Grant Arnott, our e-commerce expert, and Bruce Space, how's it going?
Yeah, Bruce Space is going really well. Yeah, so we've got a 15% off tea sale today. So
excellent.
Plug that in. Brewspace.com.au.
Brewspace, if you're looking for great tea and coffee.
400 tea varieties.
Wonderful. There we go. Next week, we're going to talk about sea change careers with some fascinating guests who've left a big corporate world to start other businesses, mainly down here by the sea. And my little pearl of wisdom to finish off. I was talking to a guy yesterday by the name of Darren. I know he listens, so hi, Darren. And he said in a conversation, it is far better off to regret doing something than regretting not doing it at all. Well, I thought that was quite a nice little pearl.
I live by that.
Yeah, that was pretty good. So stay with RPPFM. Coming up after the news is Navigating Change with Sina Summers. If you like an idea for a topic like discuss, visit us on Facebook or Twitter. There'll be links to topics discussed today and podcasts on the website. Remember, the key to selling a business is identifying which parts of the business are valuable to a prospective buyer, not valuable to you. Here is Remedy Drive with Valuable to see us into the weekend. I look forward to your company next Friday at 11 a.m. In the meantime, take care of your business.